What if there was one simple pill that could help support your energy, vitality, and cardiovascular function? Well, introducing new and improved Green Tea CR Phytosome formula from Purity Products. It's the power of three of nature's top superfoods, a clinically tested green tea plus curcumin and resveratrol, all in one simple capsule. It's potent, clinically tested, and it works to promote your energy, vitality, cardio health, immunity, and antioxidant defense. Our friends at Purity Products have a free bottle for you today to put to the test. Just pay $4.95 for shipping. Even better, call now and get a second free bottle. Purity's B12 Energy Melts. That's your second free gift. Again, for your free bottles of Green Tea CR and B12 Energy Melts, call 1-800-218-6030. That's 1-800-218-6030. Again, 1-800-218-6030. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We're looking at shibboleths. That's a fancy word which means untrue contentions, nutritional controversies that deserve the light of scientific inquiry shined upon them. We're talking to Neil Levin. He's a clinical nutritionist and he's senior education manager and product formulator for Protocol for Life Balance. It's a supplement brand that I dispense as a health practitioner. And these products are available to you on FullScript. Also, Now Vitamins. You're more likely to find Now Vitamins on the store, on the shelves of retail stores. A very, very high-quality vitamin brand. So, Neil, ready to tackle some more nutritional controversies? Shall we?
Always.
Okay, good. The contention that all sugars are the same, or is there a difference? When they say a calorie is a calorie is a calorie, you know, we kind of look at Newtonian physics, and, you know, we've burned various things in calorimeters, and we see how much energy they produce, and that's how we look at human nutrition. You know, calories in, energy out. If there's an excess of calories in and not enough energy expended with exercise, you get fat. So, true or false?
It's true to a point, but it's true in a non-time-related view. For example, if you get the same amount of calories, but it takes you longer to digest them and absorb them into the bloodstream, you're not spiking your blood sugar as much. You're not provoking the same insulin response. You're not risking as much an eventual development of insulin resistance, where the insulin isn't working as well and the blood sugar starts rising, or even a rebound, a hypoglycemic effect, where you have too much insulin response and you drive the blood sugar so low that people get faint and weak and don't feel good. So these are all subject to how are you eating the sugar, what form of sugar. Dextrose is similar to blood glucose, so it goes in pretty quickly. But other ones like fructose have a much lower glycemic index, and the glycemic index kind of predicts what's going to happen to your blood sugar and how much insulin response you're likely to get. And so you could have the same amount of calories from fructose and table sugar and yet get a different effect on the body. So a calorie is a calorie, yes, in terms of eventually you're going to get those calories in. If you get too many calories, you can get more fats. Yeah, that's all true. But there's really other factors that are very important, such as how long it takes that sugar to go in, what it takes to digest and absorb and manipulate it in the body. And so sugars are not created equal, even though they might contain similar caloric value.
So I recall some patients who come to see me, they have taken a supplement like a lozenge, maybe a B12 lozenge or a DGL lozenge, and they read down the ingredient list, and one of the ingredients is fructose. And they go, oh my goodness, there's fructose in there. Fructose is poison. It's a form of sugar that, as you say, doesn't trigger so much of a glycemic response, but it does seem to go under the radar of the body's sugar sensing mechanisms and it may accumulate in the liver as triglycerides. A lot of people feel that it's the high fructose corn syrup that's so pervasive in our candies and in our soda beverages, even in our, you know, regular food. They add it to everything. That's responsible for the epidemic of obesity since it was introduced in the 1970s. So should people be concerned about fructose as an ingredient in, say, some kind of lozenge?
Well, in a word, no. And I've looked at this pretty closely. And I think the guru in this area is Dr. Robert Lustig from Fort Collins, Colorado. Mm-hmm. And when I read, he actually said that there are the problem with fructose is the amount, and it ends up that it's around 500 calories a day is the amount that triggers all these negative effects.
So you have that's an about, awful lot, yeah, an awful lot of fructose. Yeah,
yeah, that's about a quarter of our daily caloric intake on average, but that's only about 3 cans of soda. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not that much if you're doing a large soda or something like that. But he said there's 3 antidotes also.
Okay.
Which everyone seems to ignore.
Oh.
One is to cut the dose.
Right.
One is to add fiber.
Okay.
And the other is to, I'm trying to remember the third one, but
maybe burn it off through some exercise. But
yeah, increase exercise. That was the third one.
Okay,
so there were 3 antidotes to the overconsumption of fructose. And he also tested different sources because honey has a similar ratio of sugars as high fructose corn syrup.
Mm-hmm.
So he looked at pure fructose, he looked at honey, he looked at high fructose corn syrup, and it ended up being the absolute amount of fructose, because most of the high fructose corn syrup is either 42 or 55%, about half fructose.
Mm-hmm.
So it really depended on how much actual fructose people were consuming, and it didn't matter if it was from honey or high fructose corn syrup or pure crystalline fructose. Now, you're going to probably get less than a gram, which is about 4 calories in a lozenge, which is not enough to worry about.
Right. Or maybe, you know, some people are worried about fruit. Well, we do tell our obese insulin-resistant patients not to put on the feed bag when it comes to fruit, but maybe a handful of berries, unless you're trying to get into a ketogenic state, could be well-tolerated and won't cause fatty liver or high triglycerides.
Yeah, that's self-correcting also because, you know, if you're like me, you can eat an orange, but you can juice and eat 6 or 8 oranges worth of juice.
Yeah,
and you're removing the fiber.
Yeah.
That slows it down. So there's really no problem eating whole fruit like that.
Okay, let's move on to another controversial area, vitamin D. Vitamin D3, everybody's looking out for that because they think that vitamin D2 is very bad. Far inferior. What say you?
Yeah, I've looked at this quite a bit also. And when we look at public health studies, both vitamin D2, which is formed in plant foods, and vitamin D3, which is formed in animal foods and in our own skin when sunlight hits it, are absorbed equally. They're, if you give a physiological dose, a dose, say, 1,000 IUs a day.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been done in studies. Dr. Michael Hollick, for example,
mm-hmm.
He had patients.
World's experts on vitamin D. Very, very.
Yes, he's an authority, and I really respect what he does.
Yep.
He had a paper in a journal where he said he had 7 years' worth of patient histories where some of them were given vitamin D2, the plant-based vegetarian one, at 1,000 units a day for 7 years, and the other was given D3 for the same amount of time. Mm-hmm. There were no differences in the blood workup, the hormones, any of the things you would expect vitamin D to do in the body. One of the problems has been that about 20, 25 years ago, instead of testing for vitamin D2 and D3 metabolites in the body, a lot of the testing companies switched to a cheaper test that looks only for vitamin D3 metabolites and ignores the D2 metabolites. This has been cited as a public health issue that if someone's taking D2, which a lot of times for the high dose is what doctors give.
Doctors sometimes prescribe it. It's more likely you'll get D2 if you get it prescribed by a doctor. He'll prescribe 50,000 international units for somebody who's very deficient. And then, you know, people will say, well, but that's D2. That's no good. Does it do the trick?
It does do the trick. And the reason they're giving D2 in the high dose is D2 is up to 10 times less toxic than D3 in high amounts.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But the other issue is D2 metabolizes and disappears from the body much faster. That's why it's less toxic.
Okay.
So at normal doses, there's no real difference. At high doses, there is a difference. But it's a difference in terms of D2 being less toxic.
Okay. That's actually a revelation to me, because I've been under the misimpression that D3 was far more bioavailable by about a 2-to-1 ratio. But that could actually work to a disadvantage if you're really trying to load high doses of vitamin D. So that's of interest to me. But by the way, in your product line, Protocol for Life Balance and Now Vitamins, say somebody buys the 5,000 international unit vitamin D. That's going to be D3, isn't it? The most supplement manufacturers use vitamin D3, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. I mean, there is a bias towards D3 because that is the form we produce in our bodies. Now, if you eat mushrooms and certain algae, you can get D2. And D2 as a supplement is fine. You know, if you want a vegetarian, vegan-friendly product, it's typically going to be a vitamin D2.
Okay.
Now, there are some vitamin D3s that are from lichen, which is actually a hybridized.
Yeah, most of it came from lanolin plant, you know, from the oil of the sheep.
That's the common source,
right.
Sheep wool lanolin.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a source that's very expensive that's from lichen,
mm-hmm.
But we have not been able to get authoritative sourcing in terms of making sure that it hasn't been spiked with synthetic D3 that's a lot cheaper.
Okay, so that would be like cruelty-free D3, because even though, notwithstanding the fact that they don't kill the sheep for the D3, some people feel, very committed vegans feel that it's a form of animal exploitation, et cetera, so they want the vegetarian D2, which comes from mushroom. By the way, the way to get a mushroom to produce D2 is you put it under a ultraviolet light. You give it a tan, right?
Right. That's how we make it in our skin. And there's plant sterols, which are healthy substances in mushrooms. And that's what they use to make the vitamin D2 commercially. And animal sterols, like cholesterol in our own skin or lanolin from sheep's wool, are what they shine ultraviolet light on to make vitamin D3.
Okay. Another issue, that source of endless controversy, is there a difference between the triglyceride and the ethyl ester fish oils? Now, lately there have been some studies that have come out from pharmaceutical companies that use the ethyl ester fish oils that have shown dramatic efficacy of the ethyl ester fish oils in terms of reducing the rate of cardiovascular disease. And by the way, they're very adamant about saying that vitamin companies should not draft on our results because we're not testing the stuff that vitamin companies make. Vitamin companies make a different form, which has not been tested to the extent that synthetic ethyl ester fish oils have been tested. So, you know, I guess we have to tread softly there because, we might get a subpoena, but what do you say about that?
Well, yes, the prescription fish oils are all ethyl ester forms, and they're typically the main claim is reducing triglycerides. And the reason they're better at reducing triglycerides than the triglyceride form of fish oil is because when you take the ethyl ester form, your body needs to convert it into a triglyceride form. And instead of providing more triglycerides in the supplements, like you would have with the triglyceride form of fish oil, you're using up triglycerides that are already in the body.
Okay.
So there is an advantage there. The other advantage is when there's triglycerides in there, it actually dilutes the fish oil by 20% or more.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to take more capsules to get the amount you need.
In effect, less concentrated. So in the health food industry, in the nutritional supplement industry, which form is the predominant form? I mean, is it okay to use that?
Both forms are okay, but I'm going to tell you a secret that a lot of your listeners aren't going to know.
Okay.
That a lot of the products sold as triglyceride form are not the natural triglyceride form you would get from eating a piece of fish.
Oh, okay.
They have been converted into the ethyl ester form.
Oh.
And to do that, it's called molecular distillation. They apply a vacuum to the oil.
Right.
They evaporate it, and they can separate it in a column where here's your omega-3 EPA, here's your DHA, here's your stearic acid, mm-hmm. here's your cholesterol, here's your triglycerides. They separate these and try to skim off the ones they don't want to concentrate the EPA and DHA fatty acids that are the desirable ones. This turns it into an ethyl ester form. Now, sometimes they'll add triglycerides back in after they've torn this apart and manipulated it. Mm-hmm. And now they're calling it a triglyceride form, but they're not necessarily being transparent that it's
they're sort
nothing
of reverse
like
engineering back to the triglyceride form after it's been converted to the ester form, in effect.
Right.
Okay.
And after they've torn it apart and taken things out, and they also make mono and diglycerides, mm-hmm. which enhance absorption in there, but are not natural compounds.
Okay. So I've engaged in sort of a lively Facebook debate with one of my colleagues who's not a fan of fish oil. She's a big fan of the alpha-linolenic acid. Vegetarian precursor of omega-3s that you can find in flaxseed. But her contention is that fish oils are damaged in that processing. Maybe you talked about molecular distillation. She says that they're heated or claims that they're heated to very high temperatures, which really damage them, create free radicals, make them in effect rancid, and therefore they can be potentially harmful. Is that, I demur, you know, I push back on that, but I'm not the world's expert on how you make fish oil.
No, I mean, first of all, there's not a high heat because it's a vacuum distillation. Just like if you compress a gas, it turns into a liquid. Mm-hmm. If you apply a vacuum to it, it turns into a gas. It boils at room temperature.
Okay.
You don't have to apply high heat. That's the whole point. And the other thing is these oils are extensively tested for rancidity and oxidation. So, they simply aren't. That's not the case. But you mentioned the ALA, like the flax and chia and walnuts.
Yep, yep.
Let me put that in perspective.
Sure.
You take flax oil, it's about 50% ALA, which is a plant form of omega-3 fat.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you want to get a gram, 1,000 milligrams of EPA from that. What is the expected conversion? You could get that from two fish oil capsules of a strong ethyl ester fish oil.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to get 1 gram of that, it's going to take about 20 capsules of flax oil to get the same conversion on average.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, that conversion is magnesium dependent. So if you're in the majority of Americans who are magnesium deficient, good luck converting.
And also, Neil, I've also heard that there's a gene involved in that, that some people have a robust conversion of the plant form. It's called, I think, chain elongation, delta desaturation or is it chain elongation?
Yeah, delta-6 desaturase is the magnesium-dependent enzyme.
Right. Okay, fine. That some people have a genetically a robust ability to take the, and these are maybe people who descended from cultures that were primarily vegetarian, so they were able to make, in effect, EPA and DHA from vegetarian sources. Other people lack that enzyme, or, as you say, for maybe reasons of magnesium deficiency or some challenging disease state, that chain elongation is inhibited and they get virtually no production of EPA and DHA. Am I on the right track there?
You are, because when I mentioned that 20 grams of flax oil would give you about a gram of EPA, that's plus or minus 50%, and that's your variation.
And plus, the downside of that is that maybe you're getting too much in the way of omega-6, because there is some omega-6 in there that may pile up, and that may screw up your omega-6-to-3 ratio, which we know is perhaps a predictor of inflammation.
Yeah, so it's not a... It's not that it's necessarily going to be harmful so much, but you have to do a lot of this oil. And it's actually healthy to take that kind of oil. But if you're depending on it to be converted, You need the magnesium. You need to cut most other fats out of the diet, especially, as you mentioned, the omega-6 fats, the vegetable oils. And women tend to do the conversion better than men. Mm-hmm. And it does depend on the overall volume of fats that have to be converted, because the same enzyme is used mm-hmm. to convert omega-6 fats.
It's a choke point for conversion. Yeah. Okay. And finally, you know, while I have you, you know, because you're on a roll here, and I don't know if you really even have time to do this very global question justice, but, you know, give it about, you know, 2 or 3 minutes. There's the contention that there's lots of fake products out there. You know, the nutrition industry, it's poorly regulated. It's a free fire zone. How do you know that you're going to get what you pay for and that it's not adulterated or contains toxins?
Well, this is actually a huge issue for the quality managers in the supplement industry. And actually, they meet regularly and discuss these issues. And a lot of us work together on developing test methods to look exactly for this adulteration and coming up with more advanced methods. For example, our company published a number of years ago with the AOAAC, the Analytical Chemist Organization that the FDA and foreign governments rely on to come up with standard methods of studying these things. We came up with a method of distinguishing the chondroitin sulfate supplement with heparin, a drug, and other adulterants that were used economically to spike into them, because the old tests would not find these, and we came up with a newer test that would distinguish these. We came up with a test several years ago looking for pharmaceutical adulterants in products that might contain Viagra or steroids right. or diet drugs. Mm-hmm. And we published that in a peer-reviewed journal. It's been validated by two additional publications. We're even told that the FDA and the anti-doping agencies have used our method to look for these pharmaceuticals. So we're working with other companies in the industry and other labs to develop these methods, these more advanced methods of keeping things safe, keeping them real. And for example, on botanicals, you probably remember a couple of years ago that New York Attorney General
Blumenthal, the guy
with his DNA testing of extracts. Yep. And DNA testing does not work on extracts. It has not been validated. Extraction either leaves DNA behind or could actually damage and denature it, where you get false positives.
It's the wrong test.
There's a new method called thin layer chromatography. It's validated. DNA testing will not tell you how pure a product is. If there's something else adulterating it, it just tells you if that original substance is present, assuming it hasn't been processed. It won't tell you the actives or what part of the plant it's from. Thin layer chromatography gives you all of that, and it's validated in peer-reviewed studies and authoritative monographs.
Okay. Well, you've been most informative, and you know, I also want to give an opportunity to provide a shout out to the company that you work for, which is Protocol for Like Balance, and also Now Vitamins, because they are among the leaders in the field. They are responsible manufacturers of supplements that are well vetted, well researched, and highly potent, and you get what you pay for. So thank you very much, Neil Levin, clinical nutritionist for and Senior Nutrition Education Manager for Protocol for Life Balance. And Now, thank you for joining us. Your answers are most informative, very helpful to our listeners.
It's my pleasure, and thank you.
Thanks for doing what you do. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. If you happen to be on a weight loss regimen, studies show that as fat cells shrink, they release stored toxins into the system that can actually poison metabolic pathways and slow your metabolism, causing your weight to plateau even in the face of stringent diet adherence. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Detox Protocol, a collection of carefully curated supplements to mobilize toxin elimination, easing the blahs that sometimes compromise your dietary resolve. The Intelligent Medicine Detox Protocol is an easy way to get the exact combination of the targeted nutrients you need. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com for more information and to purchase. Plus, you'll find easy-to-follow links to our heart health and immunity protocols, and much more. And for a limited time, you'll get free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com.